got it. Here we come around the bend. Tom and Ivan spreading 2 hours of news and opinion, which I tried to call the beginning of the show.
Precisely.
And it didn't catch on like I was hoping for. Here we are in the wagon, and we're heading back. Tom, you're in charge of the bits and pieces, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I do them Tuesdays and Thursdays. And Tom's in the wagon. What's wrong with that?
Wow. He's no Justify.
Did they Justify win the Preakness?
Yeah, the Triple Crown.
Ah, bye-bye. My voice is a little shot. My horse's voice is shot, too. Here we go. I like that. All right. We just heard the news talked about Earl Thomas. Earl's big comment was, I will not attend the upcoming mini camp and activities until my contract situation is resolved. I want everyone, especially the 12, to know that I want to remain a Seahawk for the rest of the career. But I also believe that based on my production over the last 8 years, I've earned the right to have it taken care of as soon as possible. I want to have certainty in regards to the upcoming year of my career. I'm going to continue to work my craft and put it to work so I can add to the team and give us the best chance to win. I hope my teammates understand where I'm coming from. I believe this is the right thing to do. E.T.
Yes. So this is a big issue for all sorts of reasons. One is Earl Thomas is pulling the same stunt as Cam Chancellor a few years ago when Cam Chancellor was insisting that he wanted to renegotiate his contract, even though it was a nice contract when he signed it. By the time the fourth year rolled around, it didn't seem as nice as other contracts. And so he held out. And if you remember, he skipped all training camp and missed the first two games. He eventually came back to the team with, in effect, metaphorically, his tail between his legs because the Seahawks refused to budge. They brought him back. He lost, you know, the salary that he would have gotten from the two games that he missed. But he sort of carried on. And some Seahawks fans think that we didn't go as far as we might have in the playoffs that year because we had missed, he hadn't been up to speed, and maybe that was, you know, he was putting himself over the team, which I think people, individuals have a right to do, I suppose, but there was some resentment, but he was such a good player that he rejoined the team. Now the question is, will that same tactic work for Earl Thomas when it didn't work for Cam Chancellor? I kind of doubt that because right now we are doing a major overhaul and Earl Thomas is like the last guy in the backfield there of the Legion of Boom that's even around. The hunch is now that if he doesn't come back and at least fulfill the last year of his contract, that the Seahawks might go ahead and try to trade him.
Mm-hmm.
Right now they, again, according to the Seattle Times reporting and 710 ESPN's.
You want to hear what Brock
reporting?
Says?
Oh, do we even have Brock?
I got Brock
better?
Here
okay.
from 710
then
ESPN.
Then I'll shut up.
Here we go.
I will not. I want everyone. I want to remain. I also believe I've earned. I want. I'm going. I hope. I believe. There's one constant in all of that. That Earl is looking out for himself in this situation. He's watched his buddies leave. Richard Sherman is 1,000% in his ear. And I think one of the main voices that he is listening to in this entire process that you have got to go get yours. And this was, you know, we've talked to Pete about this on and off the record. Pete said last week that he thought that Earl would be here. I put this ultimately on Earl, and I put it right at the feet of Pete Carroll. And it's going to lead to one fascinating conversation this morning.
Here it is. He's 29 years old, and you wonder, does your value go up or down? There's a certain point where your experience is going up, but your just physical speed and ability begins to decrease. And it's at that point where those two lines cross that the person who's paying you starts to realize this is a diminishing asset.
That's right. One of the problems is if he was willing to sign a one-year contract beyond this, like a one-year extension, I think Seattle could probably figure out a way to make it worth both their whiles. But what he's going to probably want is a 3 or 4 year contract. And what does that do? That means that he'll be 32, 33 on the tail end of that. And their hunch is whatever big money he's demanding now, it won't be worth it in 3 or 4 years.
Right.
So my hunch is that they didn't try to trade him. They wanted to kind of see what the market was like. And the best they could get, I think, might have been from Dallas was like a third round draft pick, which is nothing compared to how great Earl Thomas is.
Right.
But they figure that is an option. There's also the option, although we haven't done this since 2010, of putting the franchise tag on him, which will just, you know, piss him off, I think. But, you know, in other words, we can pay him more than he's getting right now, but it restricts him. You know, he can't go to any other team. Mm. My hunch is that there are teams willing to pay him more than we're willing to pay because he might be the one missing piece,
right,
you know, for a contending team. And right now, I think we feel like we're in a transition right now. It's too bad because Earl Thomas also, if you mentioned that, if you talk about the III business, he is resentfully looking over at the corners of the world, like Richard Sherman, and saying, how come they get all the money? Mm-hmm. And it's true. Corners get more money than safeties. Now, he's one of the best safeties ever. He would like to get as much money as...
Is he underpaid compared to other safeties?
Well, there is. When he signed this contract, he wasn't. But 4 years down the pike, yeah, there the Kansas City safety is making $13
million. Oh, okay.
So he's underpaid. If he was signing a contract right now, he's underpaid. He goes, let me cash in. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we'll be willing to let him cash in. It should be a shame.
Congratulations to UW. The Washington earns its first trip to the College World Series.
This is a great year for the University of Washington. We had the softball, the women's softball
yes.
team make it to the World Series final, and now in a come-from-behind 10th inning win.
Here it is.
Tying run when they were down to their last three outs. He hit a high drive left field. This should do it for the Huskies.
Out of time. Moving on. Oh, wait. No, there's 10 more seconds.
Yes. That ball is caught by Prescott. Here comes Jordan. And for the first time ever, the Washington Huskies are headed to the College World Series.
There you go. So, congratulations, Huskies.
There is a bit of a sad story. Luckily, I don't think anybody was hurt. Shaken up, but not hurt. It happened in Kirkland involving two guys. One guy's 19 years old. I think he's in a pickup truck. Another guy in a pickup truck. They have some words exchanged, or at least one tries to cut the other off. The guy in the one truck is now in front of the 19-year-old. I believe this all happened in Kirkland. He pulls up next to him at a stop sign, and I guess they exchange some words again. The man, the 19-year-old, pulls out a machete. There's even more stories of people with machetes nowadays. He pulls out a machete, and he's sort of banging it against the side of his truck, which is the international sign of, I'm going to hurt you with my machete. And then the one guy pulls away. The guy with the machete, he follows after him, right? And the man in the truck that's leading, that's now being followed by a man with a machete, pulls out a gun. And does he fire it into the ground when the guy with the machete comes up to his truck?
It says he fired a warning shot when the driver stopped and got out of his vehicle and approached the victim with a machete. Now, I think that you're pitching. This is a bizarre story.
Yes.
And, of course, it happens in Kirkland where all criminal stories happen.
Absolutely. Can't walk down that in the middle of the day, Kirkland.
So... there's a 47-year-old and a 19-year-old. The 19-year-old cuts off the 47-year-old man. The 47-year-old man ends up parking, you know, getting in the line behind him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of, I think that he wasn't trying to avoid him. My hunch is because the guy who's now in front of him, you got the story backwards. The young guy who was in front of him with the machete,
yeah,
he sees the other guy pull up behind him, and so he takes out and slaps the machete against the...
Oh, letting him know.
And then he
yells out.
How's everybody doing? My name is Mr. Wacky.
Yeah, go ahead.
And at that point, the guy drives off, and then he notices that the guy goes on a side street and comes around to his side and gets out of the car with the machete.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, the 47-year-old shoots a warning shot. Now, it doesn't say where, but I mean, a warning shot's either up in the air or down in the ground. At which point, the guy with the machete takes off, picks up his, goes back to his house, apparently.
Right.
Grabs a rifle,
sure,
and then comes back,
and then
him.
Fires a warning shot at that guy.
Yes. And then the guy shoots back through his windshield at him. So you've got both these guys like firing at each other.
Just warning shots, though.
Yeah, they're just warning shots. Yeah, at least three times the victim. And then he gets out of his car and he starts running. Through the woods, and he's on the 911 dispatch call. That's what we ought to get.
That's what we need.
Hey, he says, I got a crazy guy with a gun. He's got a machete. The gun, he's shooting at me, and I'm running through the woods. They eventually end up catching the 19-year-old who came back to the scene with his mom, I think,
with
his parents. And he identified, that's him, and they took him inside.
They found a bunch of his guns.
There's the rifle that I shot at, but... it's one of those. I think the story here is just do not get involved.
Right.
The guy cuts you off and you're mad. Don't flip him off. Don't follow him. You don't know what kind of crazy guy that guy is. And you might feel like, well, I'm as crazy as that guy.
Right. It's funny. He threw the machete. So it's like rock, paper, scissors. He shows machete.
Yeah.
Assuming, well, that's the end of this.
That's
right. And then the guy's like, oh, really?
Yeah.
How about a gun?
Gun, yes.
Right.
So then I go, oh, how about a rifle?
Right. How about an RPG? How about a rocket-propelled grenade?
That's right.
All right.
So, anyway, so the 19-year-old is going to face some charges.
Everybody learned their lesson. And that's the important thing.
47-year-old. That's right.
Eminem got in trouble because he was on stage, and apparently he plays and sings a song, and in it there sounds like an actual warning shot. Oh, something about I'll kill you, right? And it sounds like a gun. So, of course, everybody's still a little bit on, you know, a little on edge because of what happened in Las Vegas and the idea if somebody's trying to shoot somebody or a gun fires off in the middle of a song, it panics people.
That's right. And so there's a lot of social media outrage on how dare he take advantage of the nervous Nellies of the world because they recreated, and especially since there have been shots fired at concerts as well. They have a lot of people on social media. So I'm a huge Eminem fan. I love Eminem and stuff. But that was, you know, a bridge too far. That was just too much. And I do think that given the tenor of the times, I think that is a little concerning. Apparently, it's very realistic. However, I'm beginning to come to Eminem's defense. The more I read about this, apparently this was a song on his album from 2000. I think the Marshall Mathers LP. So it's in his repertoire, and they say he's done this recently, like 6 or 7 different concerts, and there was never any problem. If you know the song, I can, you know, I see.
Well, let's
why,
sing along. But... Let's sing along.
You know, we're shady, 'cause why? We're shady.
Catchy.
Where's the gunshot in that one?
So that's what's interesting is that the original song does not appear to have a gunshot in it when I listen to it.
Uh-huh.
Also, it's almost impossible to understand what he's saying because they bleep most of the words in that.
Okay. Got it. Entering the Fifth Avenue Theater, going into my seats on Friday, I saw you there, Tom, sat right next to you and your lovely wife for Hunchback. There's a sign there on the door that says, just letting you know, warning that there will be fog that will be used and there will be staged theatrical violence.
Is that
and
right?
And I thought, you know, I could see warning people about strobe lights or if the fog bothers somebody. But really, needing to warn people that there'll be staged theatrical violence... Come on.
Okay, so, and I didn't see it, so I don't know how accurate your report is.
That's just general words, Tom, okay. Was on the little thing there. Yeah.
The one thing I can't imagine, so first off, gunshots, because gunshots are, if you're in a theater, gunshots can be really loud. They can be kind of upsetting, but not because you think, oh my
spoiler
God, there's a real, yeah, Quasimodo.
The guy pulls out a gun, Tom, he pretty much knows what's going to happen.
No, but, you know, people can't have heart attacks.
All right, okay. I'll give you fog.
Yeah.
I'll give you strobe lights and I'll give you gunshots.
Okay.
But stage theatrical violence.
Okay, now here's the one thing, and I hadn't thought about this when you first raised this issue. This is a kid's Disney movie rendition.
Okay.
At least you think it is. Hunchback of Notre Dame, sponsored by Disney, and they're putting on this stage production. This is a very adult stage production.
Yes.
So from that point of view, maybe they're kind of warning people that are coming with kids because the ending, I'm not going to give too much away except this is a warning for people who are planning on going to this. It's a happy ending in the Disney movie.
Yeah.
It's a Victor Hugo ending on stage. And I can imagine people being upset because, you know, a prominent person doesn't make it.
Yes.
And so because of that, maybe they were – because otherwise there's – I mean, I've seen – hundreds of plays there and around Seattle, thousands of plays. And I've never seen stage theatrical violence. And believe me, there was nothing too violent about what they were doing, except that Esmeralda does, you know, she gets tied up.
But I think they might have been talking about the sword fight or something. But to me, it's like, come on, are we really?
Yeah.
We keep lowering this bar for sensitivity to the point that it's absurd. The same sign up when you go watch Sweeney Todd? That could be upsetting to people that there's stage blood.
Yes.
The whole show is stage
or
blood.
Hamlet. Hamlet,
right.
8 people are
killed
in the final scene. It's like that. So that's why I'm wondering about why. We
as you enter the theater, realize the uncle gets it from behind the curtain. Oh, okay. Thanks a lot.
Right.
Thanks a lot. I had no idea that was coming.
Polonius. That's good. Nice reference, John.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah. A theater guy.
There's a ghost in Hamlet. It's not a real ghost.
Yeah, you got to warn all this stuff before going
ghost.
In there.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying is that, you know, and then, so I was really struggling with it during the play. It bothered me. And I thought, do we, is it okay? There's 100 people in the theater. If it helps one person, is it okay? Mm. Or are we slowly lowering the bar where we're all turning into just great big pansies?
No, yeah. I mean, first off, I didn't even see the sign, so it could have been very prominent. And also, I
wait
think
a minute. It was big sign to the right as you entered. You are busy
on
talking.
The door
you,
yeah,
to the
talking.
Right.
Talking. Oh, excuse me.
Looking around
I
your
was
tickets.
Visiting.
Talking. Visiting people, talking loudly so people will recognize your voice.
I know the political. I know John Curley. Anybody want to talk to me? I know John Curley.
That's exactly what you're doing over here, the giant brownies that they sell.
I know you're trying to make a political point. I don't think it's valid.
I don't think it's a political point. It's not a political thing. Just the idea of the softening of American's spine.
That sounds pretty political to me.
By the way, the good news is Instagram is causing people to enjoy poetry. That's one of the stories that we found. As people take more poetry and put it on Instagram, so people are now reading poetry, which is a wonderful thing.
Yes.
As long as they're short.
I don't know. Well, yeah, I imagine if it's on Instagram, they're probably not 40-page epics. The thing about this is that for the first time, and it's not that significant, but for the first time since 1992 when they started keeping track, mm-hmm. more people have reported reading poetry than not. Every year it's been on a steady decline.
Yeah.
And they say, what's that? What can we attribute it to? And they say, yeah, they think that primarily it's because of Instagram. Social media, people are quick to post poems. Now, I haven't had a chance to look and judge the quality of these poems. My hunch is it might rhyme, but that doesn't make it a good poem. But at least, yeah, there is an uptick, and they say, and that's beneficial to all poetry and all poets, because if people are starting to look at one thing, they like that, you know, they may move on to something else. And so there's been an increase, something like 17% of people, I don't know how long ago, it was 4 or 5 years ago, said they never looked at poetry, and now it was down to like 9%. So they said that's a nice movement in favor. And there are some best-selling poets. I didn't recognize any of them, but
is there a certain point where you will not read? Does the poem go too long? Like if you look and see it's like six pages long. Yeah. Wallace Stevens' 13 Ways to Look at a Blackbird goes on and on and on.
Yeah,
and
but
on.
The nice thing about I would read 13 Ways because they're all like they're little like 4-line stanzas. So it really feels there's a lot of white space.
But Tom, unfortunately, it's like 20 pages long. So there's a certain point you're like this poem's too long.
Yeah. Well, no, I definitely think there are poems too long, and it's like a good poem. It's dense enough that you don't need like a nice like the New Yorker. They often have a poem, and it's like it's like a sonnet, like 14 to 12 lines. And then
I'm all right with that.
It's, yeah, I think that given our bite size kind of mentality, it's tough to stay with it with a long poem. Yes.
Ogden Nash,
he's the best.
Itsy bitsy ritzy, see her figure slim and ritz and itsy bitsy mitzy, see her figure slim and ritzy. She eats a pizza, greedy Mitzi. She no longer itsy bitsy. Ogden Nash. There you go.
All right. Ogden Nash is brilliantly funny.
All right. I didn't demonstrate it right there, but there's other works.
You remembered it. I'm impressed.
Come on now, Tom.
Man, Polonius and Ogden Nash in the same segment.
In the same thing. Weakening the spine of the American people. We'll come right back. Here we go. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973 at 1134. One of you gets a chance to be letter of the day at 1147. Lots of stuff to take care of, including the fact that at 1115, as long as you're mentioning random times, I was supposed to give away tickets to the Mariners, Tom.
Oh.
They beat the Tampa Rays yesterday.
Tampa
Bay Rays. By the way, for the 14 people that were in Tampa watching the game, they saw the Mariners. Did you see the crowd? They cut away to the crowd.
No.
It is pitiful. So sad.
Yeah.
That team has never gotten anybody to come to the games. I asked Todd Lywicki, who's back in town. He did the Tampa Lightning, got the hockey team going. He says, just too hot. Nobody wants to go. It's just too stinking uncomfortable to go to those games.
Oh, I thought management just didn't want to pay their players, so they trade away anybody who's any good. They're basically running on kind of a on a basement dollar approach to things.
And the fans don't care either. But I mean, they just said it just basically it's an uncomfortable place to go watch a baseball game. Not at Safeco Field. Not on June 15th. Time coming up. Red Sox coming into town, most likely to lose. 7:10 is the game. You're going to get tickets right now by calling 1-888. 973-5476. I almost sent you over to Keel Mortgage. 1-888-973-5476. This is find your tickets at mariners.com. And don't forget, you can hear the entire Red Sox series on 710 ESPN right here in Seattle. Right now, your tickets, two of them waiting for you. 1-888-973-5476.
We're in first place. That's
I know.
Just
ahead
crazy.
Of the Astros. It's great.
I know.
It's great. This is the type of thing. If they still have the staying power, they don't get injured, yeah. You know, after the All-Star game, then you look into July and August, and then if things are still going great, you won't be able to get tickets to a Mariners
yeah.
game.
And this is without Cano. That's the craziest thing. And
it rallies the team, Tom. It rallies
yeah,
the team.
That's cool.
Let's see. So getting to the fact that we sent Jason out to take care of that. If you're too drunk to drive, Uber has many ways to tell whether or not, as you go to get an Uber car to come to you, they will know if you are just too drunk even for Uber to pick you up.
That's right. A patent has just been okayed for a patent application for their Uber drivers to determine how drunk you are, even though it doesn't say how drunk you are. It's like whether you are a good risk as a passenger. Because they say it's really bad for Uber drivers. They pick up drunk people all the time. I mean, right. that has been their bread and butter, obviously. People don't want to drive, which that's a good thing. But, you know, they are unruly or they throw up. I mean, there are all sorts of downsides. And so they've got this patent that they claim they'll use as a kind of machine to indicate to Uber drivers what kind of condition their passenger requests are. How accurately and quickly the passenger types in their information is one clue. I'll go through all these. The angle at which the passenger holds their device, the passenger's walking speed, the passenger's location, and the time of day and the day of the week. So let's say you've got a whole bunch of typos in your request.
Mm-hmm.
What they do then is they go and look at your Uber history.
Uh-huh.
And if your Uber history is full of typos, then they say, okay, well, that's not a warning flag. Warning sign, he's just not a good typist,
uh-huh.
or he doesn't know how to spell. And the article speculates that I'm not sure what angle you're supposed to be holding it, but a passenger's walking speed. What do you do with the location? They say, well, with the location, maybe you could do is once you're given these kinds of indications that, yeah, this person probably is drunk or there's reason to believe he might be drunk. First off, you let the easiest option is just to let the driver know, hey, just want to give you a heads up, this guy might be drunk.
Uh-huh.
The second thing is that Uber could do is only match the driver, the passenger, with a driver who is comfortable dealing with that. In other words, if you say, I'm an Uber driver, listen, I've worked in bars all my life, I know how to handle drunks or something, then they say that's an okay move.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is to just change the pickup location. Say, no, that's not a good space. You know, meet me at this intersection or at this parking lot where there's a lot of light, so it's well lit, so you can sort of gauge the situation better. You can prevent the passenger from joining a carpool, which I think makes a lot of sense.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you don't want to ride share with three other people and have this one interrupt their life. And then finally, ultimately, they say that you do have the option of choosing to deny the passenger a ride.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, that raises all sorts of concerns, because what if somebody's walking speed is because they're disabled? I mean, there are all sorts of issues. The article that we're focusing on here from futurism.com says that last one, to deny somebody, that's a pretty strict decision, because you could open yourself up to a lot of lawsuits. And after all, that was the bread and butter of Uber initially, was that people can drink and then get a ride home safely. But short of that, they are working on how to protect both the drivers and their passengers. After all, there have been reports of 100 different attacks of Uber drivers on, say, drunk passengers as
mm-hmm.
well.
The Uber drivers I've spoken to that drew the Friday nights and Saturday nights, they
yeah.
make more money, but they say you do run the risk of the person vomiting in your car. And I asked them about it, and they said Uber is really good about covering those expenses.
Is that right?
Yeah,
okay.
They will charge your credit card. So if you vomit, I think it's inside the car is like $80. Outside the window, if it gets on the car, the Uber driver is told to get out of the car and take pictures of it and then send that to Uber, so then Uber will reimburse them the $60. I guess they pass it on to the drunk person to vomit in there.
You would think, yes.
Right.
I mean, that would... Fair is fair.
We were doing Uber pool, and there was a person in the thing that was really drunk and did not want us to pull over. But we said, we asked the Uber driver, and they gave us the numbers. And at that point, the person says, the drunk person goes, let me just throw up out the window and I'll pick up the difference. And we're like, why don't we just pull over and get rid of this person? How about that? Why are we negotiating where this person vomits?
Well, because once you're picked up, I'm not sure you can drop them off at the side of in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, well, guess what they did?
dropped him off.
Stopped
the
car, right? Because the Uber driver got mad.
Yeah.
The person is leaning out the window.
Yeah.
The Uber driver gets out of the car, opens the door, and the person falls out onto the highway.
Okay.
Now they're laying there on the side of the road, and then the Uber driver goes, "Well, I can't leave them here, so someone has to help me pick the person back up and put them back in the car." I'm like,
"And you volunteered, right?
No, I'm not touching some crazy drunk woman rolling around. No way.
I got my linen suit on.
Well, I did look nice, and I was in the passenger seat. And the rule is, if you're in the passenger seat,
you don't have to help in the back seat problems.
That's the rule. Know the rules, Tom. I yelled out instruction things like, grab her, but get her by the ankles.
Oh, it's a woman, too.
Yeah, that was not good. I'm going to be touching. Don't be getting involved in any of that stuff. All right. Well, it's good to know they're going to be able to track that down. Let's see. Did we find a winner that's going to get those tickets to the Mariners as they're taking on the Red Sox on the 15th?
Yeah. His name's Tyler.
Is he excited about winning?
I think he's pretty stoked.
Okay, good. Does he have any allergies to, like, altitude sickness?
I didn't ask him that many follow-up questions.
All right. It's important, Tom.
Okay.
You're terrible.
You should have strong lungs. I'm just letting you know.
We don't know for sure.
Have you seen the tickets? Have you seen them?
No, I haven't, John. Ignorance is bliss.
You know what? You can live in that world where I live.
That's right.
I'm just letting them know.
Yeah, okay.
He with free seats.
I'm surprised we have
his.
Any sponsors left, John.
I see the people, Tom, because I'm a man. I see them come through the front door and they hand them the tickets and they look at it and they're like, what?
Just killing it.
Get out of here. I'm kidding. They're great seats. You can't. There's not a bad seat in the house. It's safe. Go with the Mariners taking on the Red Sox on the 15th of June. Have fun. Go Mariners. Right back with your letters. Yes, Doug's Live with Mazda. It gives us an opportunity to have the mailman arrive in style. That's right. He's driving a Mazda, as he does every single day. He gets a brand new one at the beginning of the week. I wonder what he's driving now. Here he comes with a song in his heart, Tom. Thanks, Doug. Good. Mazda.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Right to your door. Thank you, mailman. Appreciate it. Driving off in his Mazda.
Hello!
A little teeny tiny lady in the pickle jar. She had a fabulous weekend, Tom. She was entertaining gentlemen callers. That's all I'm going to tell you.
No.
What do you mean, no?
As in the glass menagerie.
Yes.
Gentlemen callers. Okay,
there you go.
That's
okay. Good. Thank you.
On the asylum issue, a 253 weighs in. When seeking asylum, you go to the first sovereign country,
which is
Mexico.
There you go.
They can get asylum there.
Mm-hmm.
What they are doing is trying to circumvent our immigration process with some false story of asylum. Okay.
By the way, we made a promise that we wouldn't comment after the letters, and Tom
sometimes
is biting his tongue. 206. Is Cairo war? On the words, fewer. None of your hosts know how to use it. Fewer people, not less.
I object to that. I do know that. It's one of my pet peeves. It drives me crazy. Everyone misuses it.
How about over $1 million? By the way, you just broke the rule. You just broke the rule.
Okay, good. Rule's off.
Roll back on.
We need less rules.
No, we don't. The rule is just read the letters. There's no commenting in between.
That was a joke. See, it's fewer rules. Went right over your head. Or under your head.
I'm not even going to respond because Peggy from Everett needs her letter written.
That's right.
Or read.
We got a lot of letters. Let's get going.
I read the last one. Then you commented on it. Come on.
Peggy and Everett. I have a Central American friend who came to the States over 10 years ago with her children because they were being beaten by the husband. She met with members of Senator Murray's staff who told her that she had a good case for asylum, but since she didn't have any medical reports and pictures of the injuries, she would not win her case.
Mm-hmm.
These people are not counted in the statistics. Who thinks of taking pictures when they're being threatened with their life?
Yeah. Allison in Seattle says, John, if you had a 30% chance of getting your child away from a drug cartel, violence, or civil war, would you take it? I think yes, because I know you love your kids. But these kids are not these people are not breaking the law. They are seeking asylum. Why do you look down your nose at them?
Yeah, can't answer. Trudeau, Chris in Renton. If Trudeau thinks tariffs are such a bad idea, why did Canada immediately put them on American goods?
Mm. 206, I thought Tom wore fake eyebrows.
I know, that's
good. No comment in!
Okay.
How's everybody doing? My name is Mr. Wacky.
425, how about the can rings a beer company in Florida made that feed turtles. Those are cool, too. Mm. I hadn't heard about that.
360 says, packaging tastes like chicken.
On the lemonade issue, Heidi and Redondo. Hey, the reason why the price of the lemonade stands is so high in Sammamish is because the kids sprinkle cocaine into the lemonade there.
Is my pizza going to be covered in cocaine today?
Is it, Andrew?
No.
No. No nickname Beth. Oh, my gosh. No nickname Beth from Tacoma says, the peach of a lady who lives next to my community garden called the cops for graffiti problems. The graffiti was kids using sidewalk chalk to color flowers onto rocks. The cops were dumbfounded. Some people are just miserable to the core.
On the head tax, jobs tax, 360. Head tax, job tax, call it whatever you will. People still have no sympathy for CEOs of corporations that brag about making billions in profit. It's obscene.
206. Unlike the city council, realize we are all linked. Cost and taxes are passed on to consumers.
253. Jenny Durkin basically said, my job as mayor is to stay on that fence.
206. Don't confuse people being fed up with homeless with spending with the idea that they don't want to do any more for the homeless. We just think that spending so far is clearly ineffective.
And 360. Of course, the few affected corporations would never take the Seattle head tax out of salaries and benefits of the corporation's upper management.
Mm-hmm. 253. I don't like this rule that we're not allowed to comment.
I know. That's why the listeners like it.
The tension by Robert De Niro only makes him look bad, especially before this peace summit in Singapore. These outbursts will just do more to reelect Donald Trump.
206, it's okay for Trump to always be inappropriate. When anyone else sends it back, it's a bad thing. Give me a break.
And Dell in Linwood says, I don't understand why you bleeped Robert De Niro saying, forget Trump. That's how New Yorkers talk to each other, right? I heard backstage he called him mother forgetter.
On retirement, yes.
Slow down and step over that one carefully.
Retirement death issue 360.
Yes.
Are you teaching your kids to save 10% of every dollar they earn into a retirement fund like the financial advisors recommend? Didn't have anyone to teach me that back in the day when it would have made a difference.
Mm-hmm. John 206. John would not burn his head because he spent too much money on it with the Botox, the hair transplant, and the teeth.
Talking about your cremation versus burial. Right. Half and half. Kari returns. Kari, not Carrie and Sumner.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, guys, I've been on a TNC hiatus for a bit due to vacation and work travel, and boy, did I go through withdrawals.
Yeah.
When Tom called John Joe and John replied, yes, Gary, I lost it. I couldn't stop giggling to the point of convulsions the whole commercial break.
No.
I realized it wasn't that funny, and I need to get back to listening so that I can recalibrate my sense of humor. Glad to be back. I miss you guys.
Here's something for you.
Hey, check out my ding-a-ling.
All right, here we go. Where's the teeny tiny lady with the gentleman caller? Where is he? Hold on, Tom, I can't find
her. You're going to miss the letter of the day.
Whatever, here's the letter of the day.
253, scoot over, Justin Fake Eyebrow Trudeau, because you're going to have company in that special place in hell after Curly's nudging of Grandma Moneybags toward the abyss with his gifts of booze and smokes. Oh, John Curly, you are a treasure.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Area code 253. Scoot over, Justin Fake Eyebrows Trudeau.
Out of time. Bye-bye.